for this morning, for the comments that I wanted to make this morning, because it really captures our heart for you. It really captures our prayer for you. Paul puts, well, I guess I'm echoing Paul. He's not echoing me, but he gave me language, gave us language for our prayer for you. For you as an individual, but also more broadly, and maybe even more importantly, for you as a congregation, for Mount Joy Mennonite Church. So we can honestly say with Paul from Ephesians 1 that ever since we first met you and saw your strong faith in the Lord Jesus and your love for God's people everywhere, we have not stopped thanking God for you.
We have prayed for you constantly, asking God, the glorious Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, to give you spiritual wisdom and insight so that you might know him better.
We have prayed that your hearts will be flooded with light so that you can understand the confident hope he has given to those he has called, his holy people who are his rich and glorious inheritance.
And we've also prayed that you will understand the incredible greatness of God's power for those of us who believe.
This is the same mighty power that raised Christ from the dead and seated him in the place of honor at God's right hand in the heavenly realms.
And now he is far above all authority, all rulers, all power, any leader anywhere in this world or in the world to come.
God has put all things under the authority of Christ and has made him head over all things for the benefit of the church.
And the church, we're part of that church worldwide. The church is his body. It's made full and complete by Christ, who fills all things everywhere with himself.
So that's Ephesians 1, 15 to 23. Just reflected back to you as a kind of prayer and reminder. And I can truly say that ever since the spring of 2010, when I was first invited to step into the lead pastor role here, we really have not stopped giving thanks for you. This role, this congregation, turned out to be a really good fit for me and for my gifting and the things, my priorities. Several of the things that we shared together that drew me here, one was that there was a sincere desire among you to be surrendered to Jesus, as Jeremy invited us to be this morning, to a sincere desire to follow Jesus wholeheartedly, to live out the kingdom of God together. And that was something that I strongly resonated with and that drew me to Mount Joy Mennonite Church. We also shared a desire to impact the communities around us with the good news of Jesus. We didn't always do that as effectively as we hoped, but it's always been. It was before I got here, long before I got here, during my time here, and I think will continue to be true for you as a congregation in the years to come, a strong desire to sense what God is doing and the way that God can use us, can use you to impact the communities around us. Another thing that drew me, and I think has been true, is a relatively high level of emotional and spiritual maturity in the congregation. I mean, we're not perfect. Obviously, we make mistakes and we lapse into immaturity at times. We struggle with that. But on average, I would say that what I mean by that is that this is not a congregation that's overly given to gossip, that quickly turns on each other, that we tend to think the best, assume the best about each other, and to be hopeful about what God is doing among us. And that's just been a wonderful privilege for me and for you to enjoy that as part of what's true about our life together. So we came here to partner with you in those things. I had no illusions that, and I was grateful that we weren't starting at zero on any of those things, that there was a level of maturity here that I could step into and that I could help to grow and appreciate over the years to come. I've also been grateful for your patience with me as I grew into my role, as I developed my preaching voice, and as I got to know you, got to know your history, which has become over this season of time our story and our history as well. This is very much a part of who we have been and who we are. I knew that when I started in October 2010, I walked with enough. This is actually my first time. Some of you may not know this. My first role as a pastor. My dad's a pastor, and I had helped to train pastors in other roles before. But I knew enough to know that pastors sometimes face some really dark days. I knew that I was likely to encounter days that would be difficult and discouraging. And so when I got an encouraging email just a few weeks after I started, somebody sent me an email, I thought, you know what, I should hang on to this. This might be helpful to me when I get to one of those days that I'm discouraged, and it'll be good to be reminded that someone sent me this email. So I saved it in a Word document. And then I got another one, and I saved those in there as well. And I just developed the habit of whenever I've heard from somebody with a word of encouragement, I just drop it in that document. This week when I was preparing these comments, I went back and looked at that document. And I want to encourage you because that document is now 289 pages long. 289 pages. That's a credit to you as a congregation. Now, it's not tightly formatted. I didn't, clip out only the piece that was so, but 289 pages, isn't that? I mean, that's just going to be a treasure that I will carry with me. Thank you. What's one of the ways I have not stopped thanking God for you, for the generosity of your encouragement to me and to us?
We are also grateful that your worshipful giving resulted in a generous salary for Carl that has more than met our needs and included enough for us to travel to see the kids and the grandkids on a regular basis. Grateful for the benefits that we've enjoyed of healthcare coverage and vacation time and sabbatical leave. We do not take those things for granted. I want to say a personal word, too, to thank you for the way that you welcomed me as Carl's spouse. One of my best memories of our early days is a big book that you guys got ready for us that had pictures of you all and told us a little bit about each family or household grouping in the church and also explained how you all were connected to each other. That big book really helped us in the early days to master a couple hundred names more quickly. I've worked on mastering the connections. I never made it because I'm still getting surprised.
We're still discovering
some. And I also really appreciate that you did not lay any heavy burden of expectation on me as the wife of your pastor. You gave me room to offer what I could when I could, and I don't take that for granted either. Thank you.
So we've not stopped thanking God for you, but we've also remembered you in our prayers over these 13 years. 13 years of praying for you, 13 years of praying with you, asking that God, as Paul says here, would give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation so that you would know him better, not just know about him. I mean, it's a wonderful thing to know about God, but that you would go beyond that to know God experientially, by experience, that you would know God by being in relationship with God in the way that you know a really good friend that you can be totally honest with, totally open with, and just raw with that person, someone whose love you can count on no matter what. So our hope was that you would come to know God in that way, and we've been praying for that throughout these years.
In one of his last prayers before he died, Jesus was speaking to the Father, and he said, "And this is life, that they may know you." I believe with all my heart that the good life that every heart in this room longs for, right? A life of belonging and being loved and understood and a life with a sense of purpose and a sense of security and significance. That kind of goodness is found in intimate relationship with God. So my prayers for you and for us over these years, my ongoing prayer, has often focused on asking God to slow us down enough for us to stay aware of God's presence in daily life. We live in a fast world. That's not bad, but it comes at a cost sometimes. And so slow us down enough for us to remain aware of you. I've asked God to draw us into more than fear of God, more than lots of head knowledge about God, more than even dutiful obedience to God. Those are all good things, and there's more. There's a space out beyond there of truly enjoying God, just being like just overcome with joy in God's goodness and generosity and grace and justice and tenderness and creative power and kindness. You know, that list goes on. Marshall said, we know you by many names. Mm-hmm. There is a wealth. There's always more. So if you don't yet know God as someone that you get to spend time with, if you don't yet know God as someone you get to do life with, lean in. There's more. There is a goodness that will explode your heart and then some.
So that's what we mean when we say, may God give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation so that you may know him better. That's what we have in mind. So in our preaching over these years, not just in my sermons, but in the sermons of everyone who has preached here in these years, we have regularly reminded you of three wellsprings of New Testament faith. Three wellsprings, so that we would grow together in the knowledge of God in a way that's aligned with what the Scriptures say about him. That we would experience him more deeply and follow him more joyfully and faithfully as we draw on these wellsprings of New Testament faith. Paul mentions two of them here in Ephesians 1, and the first one is the central importance of the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. Paul ties everything in his preaching. If you read throughout his epistles and his letters, Paul is constantly referring to the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. And he says it here in Ephesians 1, verse 19. He says, that power, he's talking about the power that is transforming our lives. He says, that power is the same as the mighty strength that God exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly realms. So that's one of the wellsprings. The second one he also mentions here, and that is that Jesus really is Lord, truly is Lord of absolutely everything. Several months ago, we had a whole series that we focused on that phrase, that Jesus is Lord of absolutely everything. Paul says that here in Ephesians 1, verse 21, and we sang it in our worship songs this morning very appropriately. He says in verse 21, Jesus is far above all rule and authority, all power and dominion, and every name that is invoked, not only in the present age, but also in the age to come. God placed all things under his feet and appointed him to be head over everything, for the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills everything in every way.
The third wellspring is the love of God, the never-ending, unconditional, inexhaustible, incredible, extravagant love of God. In Exodus, God's talking to Moses, and he says, I am the Lord. And he says, this is who I am. I'm the compassionate and gracious God. I'm slow to anger. I'm abounding in love and faithfulness. I maintain love to thousands. And I forgive wickedness and rebellion and sin.
So everything that we've taught, everything that we've preached and called you to in our season among you is grounded in one or more of those three wellsprings. The resurrection of Jesus from the dead, the lordship of Jesus, the truly true lordship of Jesus over absolutely everything, and the love of God, the unfathomable love of God. And so our prayers have focused on these for you as well. As we look back over our years together, we are deeply encouraged by the ways that God has answered those prayers. We've been talking about the things that we've prayed for, and we just want to give you we want to tell you some stories about the way that we have seen God answer those prayers in these years together. Our prayers that our life together would produce good fruit of the sort we talked about last week. Our prayers would be that we wouldn't just have head knowledge, that it wouldn't just be something, that our following of Jesus wouldn't just be something that happens within us, but it's something that would flow out and you could actually see results in our lives. We were praying as well that we and the people around us would be able to see God at work among us and through us in the way that we live and the things that we do and say. That they would see the character of Jesus in action in us and through us. So for example, when we paid off the mortgage on this building in 2014, we realized that we didn't really have a plan in place for how we were going to celebrate that. That was a pretty big deal. I mean, it was a several million dollar mortgage, and we paid it off fairly quickly. And we thought that felt like something we should celebrate. And so after several weeks of wrestling with this and the ministry team and with the church board, we announced, we kind of worked out a plan, and we announced that we wanted to celebrate a year that we called a year of contagious generosity. A year of contagious generosity. We wanted to invite invite us as a congregation to be generous and to focus on generosity for a whole year. And so we said, let's think of some ways we could be generous together, and let's challenge people to be, let us challenge ourselves to be generous in individual ways in all the places that we go and throughout the year. So let's practice being generous, and let's spend a whole year asking ourselves and each other, how can I be generous today? What would it mean for me to be generous today? So for being generous together, we said, let's create a giving project. And our idea was to continue to invite you to continue giving as though we were still paying off our mortgage, continue to give to our building fund for another year. And we said, we've been giving a bit more than $100,000 a year. So we said, let's invite the congregation to give another $100,000. And then we'll give that money away to other local organizations that are building up our community as a way of blessing them in their building projects. And I was a little shaky on the $100,000 because I knew that we were giving away that much. But I thought, well, we were wrapping things up, and we were saying, well, okay, wow, we finished this building project. And so, you know, probably I was thinking, well, many people will then go back to being able to, you know, to hold on to their money to give it somewhere else or what have you. I think we were all amazed that at the end of those 12 months, we had raised not $100,000, but $127,000. We blew past the $100,000 mark to all of our joyful, I think, and stunned amazement. And so we were able to give away a decent amount of money to the renovations that the fire department was doing here in Mount Joy, the Mount Joy Fire Department. That was the place we gave most, a larger amount of the money to. We also contributed to the pay down of the mortgage for a sister congregation. Some of you will remember the French Church for Revival that we had a partnership with when they were here in Mount Joy. They actually bought a building in Middletown and so kind of moved out of the area, and we didn't see them as often, but we helped them to make a substantial reduction in their mortgage. We also contributed money to the rebuild of the Joyland Playground on the east side of Mount Joy. And also to the new stadium that Donegal Schools, we approached the schools and said, how could we support you in some way financially? And a sports stadium wasn't quite what we had in mind, but that's what they wanted. So we said, okay, we'll help to support that as well.
So we got to be generous together, and then we also got to be generous on an individual level. And when we got to the end of the year and we celebrated the year, we asked people to tell us how they had been generous as individuals, and we're going to reprise a few of those stories. One person said, my daughter and I reached out to some neighbors by talking to them in the yard. We baked them cookies, and we were there for the kids when they needed someone to care for them and listen to them, and once we raked their leaves in their lawn.
Another person said, we decided to grow pumpkins in our garden. We sold the pumpkins to customers in town and gave the money we raised to our giving project.
Someone else, not me, said, I donated my hair.
Another person, I volunteered half a Saturday to help to rebuild the kids' Joyland Playground. Seeing so many people work together so well was really a heartwarming experience, and knowing that it would benefit our community was really special.
We gave a neighbor some furniture that she needed, and we prayed for her during the time that she was off work due to an arm injury.
I prayed for some coworkers who were struggling with an issue. I want to be more generous in the future in blessing others through my prayers, through words of encouragement, and through time that I spend with them.
One more. I gave more money to several local and international ministries this year, although that meant we did without some things.
Another way our prayers were answered over these years, and we saw the life and character of Jesus in action, also flowed out of our focus on generosity. In the fall of 2015, as we were getting late in that year of focus on contagious generosity, our ministry team started asking, what would it look like for us to be generous with how we celebrate Christmas? Would that impact in any way what we do at Christmas time? And So we were asking, yeah, how can we be generous with our Christmas celebration?
So we ended up planning a Christmas feast for December 13, rather than planning our usual Christmas Eve service. And our focus became welcoming and blessing refugees and immigrants who've been who came to Lancaster County. We have the blessing in this county of people from all over the world having come to us. And we especially wanted to share the meaning of Christmas with Muslim friends, immigrants, and refugees who are our new neighbors.
So we, if you were here then, you may recall, we really had no idea what to expect that first year. This would have been December of 2015. We put together a plan for this feast, and we announced it to the congregation in early November because it was going to happen December 13. And what I remember from that time is that the week after we announced this to the congregation, to some trepidation, there was a bombing in Paris that put everybody on edge again. And we thought, oh my, this is going to scare some of us off, that we're not going to feel like this is something we should do. So when December 13 came, we didn't really have any idea how many of you would come. We didn't know how many guests would come who were refugees and immigrants. We tried to guess how much food to prepare. We were also prepared for protesters. We thought that once word was circulated that of who our guests were, what we were trying to do, that there might be protesters who would come. And so we had actually talked out, you know, how were we going to respond to that? Who's going to be at the point, and how are we going to respond? And there were several people, several of you perhaps, who were pretty disappointed that we were not planning to have a Christmas Eve service that year, and let us know that, that we were going to put our planning energies into this Christmas feast and not into Christmas Eve service. And that was a bit of a hurdle at the time.
So, oh, the picture. So that first year, we served 325 people from more than 30 countries. We had to set up extra tables all over the lobby because we couldn't all fit in the gym. And some people even ate sitting on the floor. Probably some of you, because you all did really well at waiting until everyone else, yeah, Neil. So there just ended up being a really warm and joyful tone to that evening. And several people told us afterwards, you know, I had a conversation with someone from another country that I would actually label life-changing. And a really delightful development was that the one person who had been the most vocal about not having a Christmas Eve service had came and said, "That was even better than a Christmas Eve service. We need to do this every year now." So we ended up planning three more Christmas feasts after that. And we won't rehearse that whole story this morning. But I'll simply mention that at the 2017 feast, we had moved over to the Junction Center because it had become so large. So we're over 500 people from almost 50 nations gathered in what used to be a cornfield in Lancaster County. It was actually 49. We almost made it to 50 nations. And I don't think I'll ever forget David Shank saying at the end of that evening, "Where else in the world is this happening right now?" And it really made me so grateful for how God had guided us into something that, you know, it was just really unique and special. So that was, this is just an example of how we saw in all of you the fruits of grace and generosity and openness to the other that our world really needs more of. So that was a delightful answer to prayer for fruit.
So a third way that we saw the life and character of Jesus in action among us, we saw answers to our prayers that the Lord would bear good fruit in our lives. We saw more fruit in the years from 2017 to 2020. In those years, we walked through a number of very challenging things, if you will recall.
And during that time, we again saw the fruit of grace and patience and emotional and spiritual maturity in you all as we loved each other well, despite some profound things to disagree about.
And we'll just give you two examples. One is from, you may remember that in 2017, we had to make a decision as a congregation between two different networks of congregations that had previously been joined together as, you know, kind of fit together. They were parting ways, and our congregation needed to decide which of the two networks of congregations we would continue to be affiliated with. And so we engaged a discernment process over a number of months. And one of the things that we did was we had a Sunday evening gathering here in our gym where we invited representatives from the two networks of congregations to come and tell us a little bit more about the two networks and like what the advantages and disadvantages would be of each one so that we could make a more informed decision. I thought it was important that meeting not be led by someone in the congregation and not me, because I didn't want it to look like we were saying this is the way to go, and that the sort of leading us and looking down on the other network, whichever it was that the leader wouldn't favor. So we invited an outside moderator to come in. We invited an outside moderator to come in and host that meeting so that it would be a neutral third party, so that both networks would get a fair hearing and that we would be respectful, listen respectfully and hear clearly what each had to say. We were a little tense. If you remember those days, there was some uneasiness and tension around this decision. Our emotions were attached to the options that we faced. And so I'm not sure that our outside moderator was all that excited about this assignment, but he agreed to serve us in that way. The evening went really well, and I think was another indication of the maturity level in the congregation, and I was really pleased with that. I'm going to read you an excerpt from the email this moderator sent me the next day. On Monday, he sent me an email, and this is an excerpt that said, "It was my privilege to serve you and your congregation." I don't think he was expecting to be able to say that. "It was my privilege to serve you and your congregation. You certainly made it an easier assignment than I anticipated. Your congregation certainly has a bright future, even as they work through this current challenge. I feel confident that God will guide you to the best decision and best possible future for your congregation." And he went on to say that it wasn't as challenging an assignment as he expected it to be, he was reducing his fee by one-third. And his invoice for us would be one-third of the amount that he had initially asked for. So, again, just an example of good fruit, I think, that God was bearing among us.
We had some more chances to practice loving each other well despite disagreements when we hit the summer of 2020. Some of us were very COVID cautious, and others of us, not so much. Some of us were very troubled by the murder of George Floyd, and we really wanted to process what that meant in a deep way. And others of us weren't so sure we really needed to spend a lot of time on that. And then there was the presidential election, and of course we were all over the map on that. It's still kind of hard to believe that all three of those things converged into one summer, but yes, they did, and we made it through. We were not perfect in how we handled the tensions related to those matters. We weren't perfect in all the decisions we made, either as leaders or as members of the congregation. And for the most part, we saw the power and grace of God at work among us when we remained patient with each other, when we chose to assume the best about each other, when we didn't turn on each other or denounce people who disagreed with us. We held on to awareness that Christians look at things from different angles. We see things not always in the same way. And that even when there are people who disagree with us so profoundly that they feel like enemies, the call is still to love, because Jesus asks us to love our enemies, not insult them or seek to destroy them.
Friends, God has used these years to grow us up in him, to shape us to look more and more like Jesus. God has guided us, God has shaped us, God has worked in us and through us. And our prayers, I think, have been answered. We want to encourage you today that these wellsprings of New Testament faith that we mentioned before are still actively producing good fruit among us. And as we reflect together today and in the years to come on the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, that will continues to build faith and hope in us. The resurrection of Jesus gives us hope for our future. The fact that Jesus really is Lord over everything, absolutely everything, gives us courage and gives us confidence, gives us patience, allows us to be patient and avoid anxiety because we know that Jesus really is Lord of absolutely everything. And continuing to be refreshed in the knowledge and the experience of the love of God continues to give us peace and continues to allow us to be people of grace because we're fully and well-grounded in the love of God for us as children. And so, friends, with all of these things in mind, the assurance we want to leave you with today is that you are ready for this. You are ready for this. You are ready for the next steps into the future. God has prepared us and God has prepared you as a congregation. You're ready for this next season of God's work among you. God has been faithful to you. God has been faithful to us in the whole season of our time here with you and some of the ways we've illustrated this morning. And God will be faithful to us, to you and to us in the days and in the seasons ahead. So you are ready. You're ready for this transition to being led by an interim pastor. You are ready to receive those whom God is adding to our number even in these days right now. And you are ready to be peacemakers. You are ready to be peacemakers in the face of differences within the congregation. Peacemakers as we continue to navigate the differences between us here in the congregation. But also to be peacemakers in the relationships you have with people wherever you go throughout the week. I mean, after all, there's another presidential election right around the corner, and we're going to get to practice all of those skills again. But you're ready for this. You're ready to be peacemakers with your neighbors, with your family members, with your coworkers, with your friends, with people at school. You are ready for this, and it gives me great hope and great confidence that God will continue the work that he's begun within us and among you as well. So this morning, we want to leave you with a blessing from us to you, a blessing from Scripture. And so we'd invite you to receive this as a final word of benediction, of blessing to you as we sing with the worship team.